I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to The Curator Podcast. This is Season 2, Episode 2. An interview with Paul Walensky from 65 Days of Static. Now, before we get into this interview, I should let you know that around halfway through it, the support band for the evening started playing. So when you hear loud music coming through, you know exactly why. Also, at some point, another person comes into the room and does the work because we were in a production office. So you might hear that too. So, Paul.
Hi.
How are you today?
I'm pretty good. It's the last UK date on this tour, which means we get a day and a half off before we go and do the rest of it, which is pretty exciting.
That's also sounds a bit torturous.
No, I mean, it's great. It's been like, I think it's about 5 weeks now, and we've got a couple of weeks left. But we're going off to Asia on Monday, so that's not going to feel like touring. That's just going to be one grand adventure.
5 weeks is a long time, and I don't think I've actually spoken to anybody so far on a podcast that's been on the road for that long. How are you feeling?
Pretty good, considering. It's like we have a kind of weird level of success or lack of, you know, in 65, and so we don't have the luxury of touring, you know, just the major cities. You kind of got to go further afield, and because people aren't necessarily going to travel to the bigger venues, but it means that you travel more, and so you want to fill in any days off with gigs on the way, because you might need to go from the bottom of Portugal to, you know, up to Belgium or something. So it's like, and you can't afford the days off, so you have to keep filling it, and you don't always get top priority because, you know, We're us. But we've got a great agent, and she puts it together slowly and carefully, and we're good for it. You know, like we've done longer tours than this before. It's just we've never been this old before, so it starts to get a bit harder. But this one's still been good.
Is that like the knees getting sore and the back getting sore every night and all that kind of thing?
Yeah, a little bit. It's I don't know. I just enjoy sleep a lot more than I used to, I think.
It doesn't love sleep.
Yeah, it's possibly the best thing.
So I did some research, and man, people keep asking you how the No Man's Sky soundtrack thing came about. Does that get tiring yet?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, we've literally run out of ways to answer most of those questions, and we've started to have to, like, so many things come through that are like really, you know, it's just like thoughtless interviews that are going to be published as Q&As just for some website to have some content for half a day that might generate some ad, you know. It's like it's kind of crossed that threshold, so there's so many people sending us stuff like that, and we've just had to stop because, like, there's only so many ways I can tell what is a pretty basic and uninteresting story of them emailing us asking to use some music.
So how did it come about? No, if people want to know, they can fucking Google it. If they don't know it already, then whatever. Yeah. But I did have one question, which it became more pertinent to me as I read more interviews, and it's like, you guys have been approached by a lot of games magazines, which doesn't happen to bands. Obviously, you've done a game soundtrack. Has the vibe been different since you released the record in terms of people that want your attention?
It's been hard to say, really. I mean, yeah, there was like a huge amount of interest from the games world, which was cool, and we don't have much of a frame of reference for that. We're not huge gamers. We've been paying attention more because of doing this soundtrack, and it's a really interesting world. But it was, I don't know, it was the only sort of sign we've, the tangible thing that we've been able to experience is that is this tour so far. And there's definitely been people from new people here, people into the computer game stuff, but to be honest, that's not been the it's not been what's been getting the biggest reaction. The Wild Light stuff that we played, sorry, like the album that we made 3 years ago, we're still playing a lot of that. I mean, we're playing a lot of all of our back catalogue, but I think because we did tour hard when Wild Light first came out, but it feels more like whatever's happened in the last 3 years, people have gone deeper into the back catalogue stuff than the new stuff. Maybe it's just too soon for the new stuff. So yeah, I don't know. Like, it's clearly not been a hindrance, and it should. But it's hard to quantify exactly how much of a difference it really has made.
Would you say there's been more interest in the band since the No Man's Sky soundtrack came out?
I think so. But like, I mean, the Facebook follower count keeps ticking up. The Twitter account keeps ticking up. More people like the things we post a little bit, but. That sort of, like, the trajectory of 65 Days of Static forever has been a very, very slow upwards, like, line. And if that ever stopped, or we felt like we just weren't delivering anything good anymore, we'd just kind of give up. So we're kind of used to the kind of, you know, we take sort of solace in that. That's, like, more and more people slowly hear us and tend to like us, and that's great. So maybe it's sort of accelerated that line a little bit, but it's not been life-changing or anything.
So let's talk a little bit about the soundtrack, because I had it on a work today and I had it on the way here as well, and it's just, I'm not a gamer myself, so it was cool to see bands like move into that. Like, I interviewed Health as well, and they spoke a little bit about the Max Payne 3 soundtrack, but from what I gather and the things that I've read already, and we'll probably go over them again in a minute, but the sound, that the way you composed this record has seemed to be completely different from the way they did, which is obvious. Bands compose music differently all the time, but this was very much album first, is that right?
Yeah, sort of, but that wasn't just because that's what we knew how to do. It was it was a deliberate choice on our part, because there was some deadlines, there were some really tight deadlines, and it was a new thing for us having to work to other people's deadlines. And we definitely wanted to make a soundtrack that would stand up in its own right for people who didn't care about the game, even though it was a game soundtrack. That was like our number one goal, because they wanted it to be a 65 Days of Static album, and we didn't want to just let our, the 15 years we've been doing this be sort of subsumed by the computer game. We still wanted it to keep our identity distinct from it. So we're like, right, okay, we're going to do that, and we'll write the album first because we need this sort of raw material anyway. So we did do that first, but while we were writing the songs, the way that we normally write them is, or write a record, it seems to be that we generate loads and loads of material, and most of it gets thrown away. And a lot of that is because it's rubbish, but then there's still plenty of stuff that gets thrown away because it just doesn't fit. A song might start as a piano ballad and end up being all electronics, or a guitar wall of noise might end up being a piano thing. Like, all of these things go in all different directions, and we sort of used to jettison what we didn't use as a kind of house cleaning sort of like.
Clear
the slate
kind of thing.
Yeah, it just seemed like the sensible way to do it. So what we did with the No Man's Sky stuff is we'd still weed out all of the rubbish, but then we'd collect all of the like alternative ways the songs could have gone that ended up not being the album songs, and kind of started building these libraries of sounds or melodies or phrases or different chord progressions that might have once existed in a song but got removed, like things like that, and just tried to, you know, like in vague like collections of hard drives, just kind of try and keep on top of all of this stuff. So then we did the record, and when it came to doing the in-game soundtrack stuff, it was there was much more to play with than just, you know, sort of the stems of the songs, which would have been a a fancy, it would have been like you could have made a fancy remix engine in the game, but it wouldn't have been able to do the sort of things that we were then able to do because we had all of this stuff.
So like it's almost like if by using the alternate takes, you've kind of got echoes of the stuff which I guess made onto the album, kind of peppered throughout the game. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And that was quite nice because like we've learned to sort of not be too precious about the things that get left behind, because that can be really dangerous. You know, if you keep coming back to these same old ideas that you really want to fit into a song, and sometimes there's reasons why they never fit or they've never worked, and it's healthier to just kind of push forward. So it was like a reward. It was like, oh, I really like playing that on piano. And even though it's no longer, doesn't exist on the record, it can still, there's still a place for it tucked away in some soundscape or whatever.
So working to a deadline, I must have been, I mean, that did that push the creative sort of path in a specific way, because you knew you had something coming up, so you kind of had to like go into the office and produce some work?
Yeah, a little bit. And that's kind of, it was the cause of some anxiety, I guess, because he like it's only a few shades away from, you know, just like composing for hire, and that's totally the wrong way to approach music. But because this particular project was like, they clearly had a vision, and it clearly included a sound that was sort of ours. It was it didn't feel like we were, you know, selling our souls or anything. It was just the reality of the situation. And studio time is always expensive. So there's always a deadline. Even if it's just us, and if it turned out not good enough, we wouldn't release it. But when you get into the studio, there's always still the 2 weeks or whatever that you have there, because you're burning money just being in that place. Yeah. So we're used to that kind of... you know, the work ethic that comes with that sort of pressure. But the other thing I think was they wanted 65 Days of Static album, but they clearly wanted a specific kind of 65 Days of Static album that probably wasn't what we would have written. Oh wow,
that's all we have time for, I'm afraid.
This way. Okay.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.
Yeah, like because I think the direction that we were heading in is not like it's weirder and noisier, I think, is the general kind of focus of the four of us. And if we'd been left to our own devices, that's what would have happened next. And so even though they said that we could write whatever we wanted, that's not really what they meant, because you know, they wanted the sort of more melodic, more epic, I guess, stuff that we sometimes do, that we try and avoid, but it kind of comes out anyway. So it was like a weird balancing act, I guess. That was in many ways harder than the the deadline aspect of it.
It's made me realise that you're essentially working with a fan who wants you to be the band that they think that you are. And obviously, as a musician, you want to keep pushing yourself and growing. So, I mean, I never considered that before. That must have been really weird.
It was really weird. Yeah, we're like a puppet band that's like doing the bidding of our master. But the thing was, like, it was the first time we did that. You know, we like you say, we've always sort of tried to do different things and push in new directions. So maybe this is just like a bit of double think on our part, but we were like, well, this is the first time we've tried this, like the first time we've ever tried to consciously look back at our back catalogue and understand what it was about songs that people liked and try to recreate that in a way that wasn't painful for us, you know. So Supermoon, one of the new songs, is it's a clear nod to Debutante, which was an old song that they used for the trailer, and we used the same vocalist and kind of tried to evoke the sort of more hopeful side of what we do, and it was interesting. Like, I don't think we do that again, but at the same time, it was a good sort of humbling reminder that this is all just like pop music, you know. And when we wrote Wild Light, we made a very different choice than all of the previous records. All the previous records, we thought that we were heading towards this sound that we could hear that was like somehow impossibly new, and like that nobody had ever quite done this thing before, and like that sort of brilliant, idealistic kind of enforced naivety. And then with Wild Light, we were like, you know what, let's stop trying to push into the unknown and dare ourselves just to write something that we think is good. And if it sounds not as cutting edge as we might think that we want it to, that's a risk, but we're going to try it. And I think it's still the record that we're all proudest of, and it didn't feel old, and it didn't feel worthless or nostalgic in any way. It was just like, okay, we've got all of these tools now, all of these different ways and methods of making music. Let's just make music that we think is good, and not, it was sort of like a shift in our MO, you know. It's like, we're not pushing into the future. There is no future in music in that way anymore. There are no new sounds. Like, it's all become a bit like atemporal. It's just like, we're all here now in post-modernity or whatever. And so the No Man's Sky thing was a kind of a little bit like that. It's like, well, you know, looking back in this way isn't the sort of dangerous lapse into nostalgia that we once thought it could be. It's not something that we should do every single time. We don't want to start making the same record over and over, but it's not the end of the world.
Wild Light is, I don't mean to say that older stuff wasn't focused, but Wild Light definitely has the cohesiveness of a really focused, it's a tight 8 songs really, even though some of the songs are over 6 minutes, but it's still very tight and focused, which the No Man's Sky soundtrack sounds like the natural progression of that, like you said, that ethos.
Ah, okay, that's interesting. I did an interview last week where a long time sort of follower of us called it sort of more of a standing still, and he sort of meant it as a compliment, and I think he was coming at it from the same idea. It's just like, you know, you don't always have to forge into the unknown. It can be the same thing, just as long as you're not always doing the same thing.
I refuse to believe you can stand still, especially if you're in a process where you've got to interrogate your own music for other uses. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do know what you mean. And like, even if you, because it's I don't know. I mean, maybe there's diminishing returns if that's all you ever do, like interrogate and then like there has to be outside forces pushing you in some direction, and like, because it's just going to become incredibly self-indulgent to do that endlessly. And you see so many bands do that. For me, like, so many bands that I used to like, that I'm not going to name, but you know, it's like they've found what works and they'll keep doing it, and that's I mean, it's fine. And again, like, there's other bands who found who've always done the same thing, but it's like they're chipping away at the same idea and remaking it, like I don't know, like sculptors who make the same shapes over and over again, but they sort of like I don't think we're that kind of band though. We've always tried to, I don't know if it sounds any, I don't know how radically different the albums sound from the perspective of not being in 65, but from inside we've always tried, you know, to switch up our like tools and methods and approaches and things.
Why talk about the interrogation aspect of it? Because obviously, like you said, you had to deconstruct it in order to make it serve many different uses in the soundtrack. And was that enlightening into your own creative process to take apart, like, to make sure that every single thing worked on its own as well as part of a unit?
Yeah. I think the biggest lesson that we learned was to trust ourselves a bit more, that things do work, and that actually we don't need to spend. It's not careless to sort of smash things out really quickly sometimes, because we've been doing this a long time and we've got better at doing things less consciously and that turn out to work. Like Supermoon, which is clearly like it's one of the tracks that they used to tease some new trailers, and it's by far the most popular one on the internet and stuff. Like, I guess it's the single of the album. We had to finish that song in, like, we barely started writing it, and then suddenly they needed us to get on a plane to go to Vegas to play this insane Game Awards show where they were going to announce that we were doing the soundtrack. And so we had to play that song to this, and we hadn't finished writing. We had to go to the studio as well, because they needed, I can't remember exactly what it was, but they had to have a studio version as like backup or something. Like, I don't know what it was, but so we had about 24 hours to literally just like finish a song, to get into a studio, to smash it down. Oh, it was for like syncs or something for the video. And like we went there and we did it, and we were like, this is ridiculous. Like, we need to like spend 6 more months with this piece of music to iron out all of the problems, to tighten it up, to work out what. And we just never had that time. But then we didn't think we liked it at all. In fact, we kind of hated it. But then we just sort of sat with we sort of put it aside because we had all of the other songs to write and the deadlines and stuff. And then finally came back to it, and we're like, right, let's finish this. And we're like, oh no, it's finished. It's like, yeah, we did it. It's actually quite good, isn't it? It's fine. So yeah, it was more the kind of not having time to interrogate ourselves as much as we normally would, that was probably like made us realize that
we got this.
Yeah.
Has Supermoon changed now that you play it live?
Sorry, what's
that? A Supermoon change? Is it? Have you guys changed it in any way since you've started playing it live? It does happen naturally, but I mean, you know,
we've switched around some of the way we play some of the electronic elements. This was a big difference about the game soundtrack, is that the deadlines were so tight that we didn't have the time to consider the live aspect of it as much as we normally would do. Like Wild Light, we could play from start to finish before we even went in to record the record. But this one, it was, you know, there's a lot of stuff done on computers, a lot of layering up of guitars without any thought to, you know, there might be 5 guitars going on, and it's like, well, it doesn't matter. We'll just like we'll work it out later. And that was, Supermoon was really the only exception to that, because we had to play it live by chance for this awards show. So that's not changed very much. We did some, like the electronic thing for us is always complicated, because the live show, we prioritize different things. So we try not to use backing tracks, but also I think there's a lot, there's a much kind of more complicated conversation about live electronic music, because it's, you know, it's not really possible. Like, the most interesting way to do live electronic music is to stand crouched behind a laptop, you know, but that's not exciting for anyone to watch. The physicality of a live band is always more interesting than someone behind a laptop, and that's kind of why we started being in a band in the first place, rather than being behind laptops. And so the balancing of like loops and samples and synths and V drums and like sharing that out amongst the four of us within the kind of acoustic or electric, you know, like the real instruments, has been something that we've something that we think about a lot, and it took us to kind of until the start of this tour to properly settle into what who was definitely doing what. So Supermoon, it's been through a few iterations, and I think it's kind of settled now.
I mean, having to have that sort of dichotomy between playing electronic music and obviously the live instrumental stuff, and you say that's always been something you've thought about. I mean, is that any point in your career does that kind of cause you a bit of angst to think, holy shit, we can't actually do this completely live?
Like in the early days, like when we were just starting out, it would always sort of upset us to read reviews that accuses us of using backing tracks and stuff, because we tried so hard to make it more interesting than that, but it doesn't keep us awake at night now. And like there's songs, like for example, let me think. Like Heat Death Infinity Splitter on Wild Light, there's like a sub bass line that plays back in time with what we're doing, and technically that could be like incorporated into my keyboard sound, or because Sai, who's normally doing the bass, happens to be doing a sort of high pitch bend synth thing that requires two hands and is quite complicated, and I'm playing a two-handed synth thing, so like all of the other electronics are live, and probably nobody would. No, that's not right. Like, nobody could tell that was a backing track. You know, like it's doing the exact same thing that I'm playing live, but it's just like an octave lower. And if it wasn't there, nobody would notice, but it wouldn't sound quite as good. But having that sort of specific sub bass frequencies really sort of, you know, hits people in the chest. And so we're like, well, who cares? Like, nobody knows. We're not ashamed of having a thing that's playing back along with us playing live because it sounds better.
You still wrote the fucking music, so.
Absolutely, yeah. It's like, I often say, like, if you went to see Daft Punk, like, I never saw that show, you know, with the giant pyramid and stuff, I never saw it. But, like, if it turned out that they just pressed play on a DAT tape or something and the whole thing was an act, like, who cares? Like, because they're putting on this most incredible show and making people dance and so on. And you can't ever make literally live electronic music unless you're, you know, digitally synthesizing sine waves at source. There's always going to be a layer of, well, compromise isn't even the right word, you know, it's just like, it's just decisions that you have to make to decide what it is that you're trying to present. And for us, it's more about the experience of someone in the audience, like having that noise coming at them, rather than us feeling smug that we're able to manifest this like electronica without any pre-recorded anything, you know. But you know, it depends on the song, and we just sort of take it as it goes.
So
it's okay. It's okay to do that.
Yeah.
People need to realize that.
Yeah, yeah. It's fine.
It's not a big problem. I just enjoy the show. before we get finished the No Man's Sky thing, I've got one more question I'd wanted to ask. And you've kind of covered it a little bit, and I think we could probably glean the answer from this past conversation. But was there ever a fear that you might be getting involved in like making music by committee?
Sorry, making music
by committee.
By committee? No, not really. Because the very first conversation that we had, like the proper one, where I went to London to meet Sean Murray, who's the game director. And it was so nice, and he was just, you know, he's been a 65 fan for a long time, and he told us that it had already been in development for a couple of years, and they would, every Friday, they'd sort of do a play test or whatever you'd call it, and they'd use old 65 songs to sort of drive their imagination. Like, the story he tells is, like, you know, it'll be a cube travelling to a sphere, and it's supposed to be a spaceship going to a black hole or something, and they put our music on and be like, right, like, imagine what this is, what it's going to be like and sound like. And it was so flattering, and then we had the second meeting with the sound designer and him. We were ready then to be like, you know, do you want us to use an orchestra? Do you want to, like, what are you looking for? We're sold on this project that you've got. And they were like, just write a 65 Days to Die record. You don't want us meddling. We'll leave you to it. So we were like, all right, okay, fine. Like, if anything, a bit more of a committee at the beginning might have been helpful, because, like, you know, like I said, like, we slowly sort of gleaned the kind of 65 Days of Static that they wanted, but that is hardly like, it was hardly like an iron fist, like, forcing us into somewhere that we didn't want to go. It was and towards the end there might have been some friendly suggestions from Paul Weir, the sound designer, but it was only stuff like, you know what, I'm working with the game mechanics now, and if you could give me 50 arpeggiated synth loops, I think that would work really nicely for the spaceship engine in this context, or something like that. So we'd be like, yeah, for sure. But that doesn't, again, didn't really feel like being forced to do something that we hated. It was just like, okay, let's make some cool synth noises for a bit.
Have you played the game?
I played it for about 5-6 hours. I don't have a PlayStation. None of us do. And I went round to my brother's house and played it, and it seemed cool. It's beautiful. It sounded kind of nice.
It sounded good.
Yeah. Well, it made me like realize the pressures that the sound designer must have been under, because we didn't have to take responsibility for anything working, you know, on a technical level. We were involved in the logic of the generative music and things, and that was really exciting. But ultimately, we just passed loads of audio to them and washed our hands. That was it. And so I think it made me realize how much of our music kind of sounds like spaceships that he had to sort of weed out, you know, because you don't want the music to sound like spaceships, because there's all these spaceships flying around and mining lasers being like, it's a very noisy game. But I think he's done an incredible job kind of making it all. Like, our soundtrack is just a subset of the whole sound design, and it's really nice. But yeah, I don't know. Like, clearly, it's been an incredibly divisive game, and I can sort of understand why people expecting a more narrative-driven game might be let down by it. But at the same time, I can't understand the hostility. You know, the entitlement, the hate that. Like, if the people that are so angry about this video game, if that's what all they have in their lives to be angry about, then I don't know. There's something not quite right there.
The people on the internet doing things that people on the internet do.
Yeah.
So one thing, I guess, struck me when you were saying that. So that means you've heard your own music played in weird ways that you never imagined it would be played in.
Yeah, and
that must be odd.
It's odd, and that, you know, that's the most rewarding thing about the whole process is, like, again, as I just said, the sound design is incredible, and not to take anything away from it, but the feeling of doing this generative music stuff and then suddenly, like, being thrust into a field where there's so much unexplored potential, which is so unlike the music industry normally. You know, it's just the same old failing music industry out here, but over there, there's like... It's given us so many ideas, and what's actually going on with the generative soundscape to me doesn't feel that complicated at all. Like, I couldn't write the code, but conceptually it's not that complicated, and we've got loads of ideas where you could develop that in really interesting ways compositionally, I guess that's just not been done yet, and so we'd really like to push forward and do more of that, and just, it's just about finding the people that can, I don't know, actually do the typing.
It's like getting somebody that can create a program which can then help you to make more interesting stuff, basically.
Yeah, and I mean, like, and the barrier to entry for that stuff is coming down all the time. We did actually build our own software because we couldn't have access to the game inside, you know, that's just not how it worked, but we sort of knew what the logic was going to do in the game and created our own software up in Sheffield in our little room to sort of what's the audio word for visualize? to like hear, like, so we could hear what it was probably going to sound like, because otherwise we would have had no way. We'd be like writing blind, because writing deaf, because well, you know, what we were actually generating for the game, aside from the album, was literally just stacks and stacks of audio files, you know, recording Joe doing an E minor drone 50 different ways and putting that in a folder called drones. And, you know, I mean, it's like, it was weird. So we couldn't hear it all coming together unless we built that sort of system ourselves. So yeah, that's, I think all of that is going to get taken forward into whatever we do next, even if it's like just another regular album. There's really interesting things to, when you hear your own music coming back at you in ways that you've sort of curated but don't necessarily anticipate. It's interesting.
Are you okay to keep going for a little bit longer? Because I've got another couple of questions I want to actually get into what the podcast is about. We can get carried away a little bit, but this is the whole podcast is kind of about creativity. We've spoken a lot about that. I've spoken a hell of a lot about that, actually. But it's also about origin stories, Paul.
About what?
Origin stories, Paul. So, what is your origin story? Where did you become? When did you start becoming a musician? What was the drive to do that?
That's a tough question. I think I've always wanted to be one. Yeah. Like,
it's not a wrong answer, obviously.
Yeah, I got really lucky with my parents. They big music fans. I never got played nursery rhymes or anything. I think. I've been a New Order fan since I could walk, you know, and had cassette tapes of Substance and stuff just on repeat the entire time. That was like my childhood, really, and they had a great vinyl collection. So I was very lucky in those early years, and had piano lessons as a kid, and then a little Yamaha keyboard or something. And I think New Order were clearly just like a... It was just a big driving force. And so I was making little electronic music and then borrowing the drum machines from school and learning how to use them. And I think it's just what... it's just what I always wanted to do. And then finally got to university after all of that. And because that's where you go to start bands, right? So did that, basically.
So where did the desire to be in a big bombastic rock band come from? Because, I mean, The Fall of Math is a pretty big rock record.
Yeah, well, like, around the time that we were starting, we were listening to... We weren't listening to much guitar music, but there was really interesting stuff going on. People like Kid 606 and Squarepusher and Aphex Twin, and was big Orbital fans. Like, that was my sort of... That's where I kind of tended to be. But like I was saying, it's like I didn't just want to be like stuck behind a laptop. And around this time, At the Drive-In and Trailer Dead were a sort of, for us at that time, like a new breed of guitar bands. It was like a world away from all that, the new metal nonsense, and the energy and the kind of life that they brought to their shows was really exciting. And but we were listening to like electronic music as well, and it didn't seem like in any way weird to not have a singer and to have electronics and guitars at the same time, but no one seemed to be making that kind of thing. So that was it. It was just like, well, okay, I've got a sampler, Joe's got a guitar, just yeah. And like, we didn't have a drummer for quite a long time. We were like a three-piece of a guitar, a bass guitar, and electronics, you know. So in our, like, we get this a lot. Like, clearly, the outside perception is different from ours. Like, because for us, we started as an electronica noise thing, and then we got a drummer, and we sort of that kind of opened us up to the live show, and that was so exciting for us that I guess that framed how the first record sounded. So it was never that we started as like a rock band. We were kind of like, all right, we've got all of these things, but haven't quite worked out what to do with them. And and then Rob joined the drummer, and then that the first sort of batch of songs became The Fall of Myth.
I remember when I first heard Retreat Retreat, and that just blew my mind. I'd never heard anything like it at the time. It was just one of those things. It was like, holy shit, what is this? I'd never heard the electronica and you know, rock like shoved a girl like that, and I was like, fuck man, like that's really fucking cool. But you guys have obviously grown to be so much more than Fall of Myth like is. You can hear it all over the place now, you know.
Oh, thanks. Well, yeah, that's the other thing. Like we from the very beginning, we like don't want to be one of those bands that's always trying to recreate the energy of your first records, because you can't, because you know we were like early to mid 20s like when we made that record, and it is a very energetic record, but I don't know, like it was a slow, I think the first three records were, or the first four records I think were one chapter for us maybe. Probably We Were Exploding Anyway is the record that we were always trying to get to, certainly with the first two records. I think we kind of made a wrong step with the third one. It was a bit too heavy, a bit too dense, a bit too rock band. Like the thing that I think it's the thing that means we're forever described as post-rock now, because it was very serious, and a bit too indulgent in its seriousness. I don't know. Like there's a few tracks on there that I don't hate, but I think none of us really liked where we ended up. And Exploding was the thing. It was like, this is what we wanted, and now we've done it. And in doing so, realised that it was never going to be as like poppy as we thought it could be. If you see what I mean, like we always wanted to write pop music, and for to be okay for pop music to not have any singing or and be noisy, you know, like the Prodigy do or something. But like by that point, we were like, okay. This is like our best shot at that kind of thing, and we're really happy with it. But we're just like four guys, none of whom are Keith Flint, and it's still a bit weird. And like we even had Robert Smith on that record, and instead of doing what a more savvy band would do, and write like Crystal Castles did it, right? Write a 3-minute pop song, Robert Smith. There you go. We kind of like covered him in distortion. It's an 8-minute long song. He doesn't sing until like the last 2 minutes or something. Like we were just unconsciously doing whatever we could to not succeed in any sort of like commercial way, which is fine, you know, obviously fine. But we kind of we felt like we nailed it. And although I can't, it's like looking at old photographs, you know, I can remember that time, but I can't fully relive the sort of impulses that made us want to write that kind of music specifically, because we're somewhere else now. But we were really happy with it at the time. I'm still proud of that record, but it was like a kind of, okay, that's like the end of 65 Mark One, and let's work out what to do next.
Now we're doing soundtracks and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny how things happen like that, isn't it?
Yeah. Like I think we're just like so stubborn. We stuck around long enough that finally, like, people who are listening to us from the beginning have assumed positions of power, like video game directors and stuff. And so, like they haven't forgotten about us, and that's quite nice.
So, I mean, that was obviously a huge project you've just done, and I guess, do you have any idea what the future's going to look like from here, or have you not really thought about it? Tell me all your secrets, Paul.
I wish I had some. We don't know what we're doing.
I'm so glad you said that, by the way. It's so refreshing to hear that. As a musician, I'm always like, man, these guys have got to figure it out, surely.
No, absolutely not. We'll, you know, we'll finish touring this. It'd be great to get some festivals next summer. That'll be, I suppose, the test of whether this game has meant that festival bookers think we're cool enough to book now or not. The answer is usually, yeah. But we'll, you know, so we'll tour, we'll do festivals, and then, yeah, it'd absolutely be great to do more. We'd really like to do the film soundtrack. The computer games, it's a weird world. Like, a lot of computer games look like not the kind of thing that we'd want to soundtrack specifically, but the sort of, the form of it, the interactivity of it, and the generative aspect of the music, it's I found really fascinating. And it's a perfect vehicle for that kind of thing. Like, you could do it in maybe sound installations to a pretty niche audience, and that would be great too. But I like the idea of this very popular form doing something genuinely groundbreaking to a lot of people. So it would be great to do more of that. But I don't know how you do that. Like, I don't know. There's no, like, phone number to ring. Like, I don't know how other bands do it. Just wait and see.
Well, there's nobody phoning you all the time going, can you do my game, please?
Not yet, no.
I'll put some feelers out for you. Okay, thanks. Find something for you there. Paul, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you very much. Is there anything you want to say or anything you want to ask me before we finish?
I don't think I've had enough sleep to do anything other than react to questions. Forming my own might be a step too far at this point in the tour.
After 5 weeks, I don't blame you at all. Paul, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed that episode. Please remember to subscribe to this podcast. You can do that right now by hitting the subscribe button and whatever podcasting app you're using. Don't forget to check me out on Twitter at The Curator Pod. Until next time, bye bye. This episode was created, edited, and produced by Mark Fraser. If you want some more information, please go to www.thecuratorpodcast.com.